Don't mind me. Oh, I think I poured too much. Pouring myself a little bourbon. Welcome in. Latest episode of that SEC podcast. Supposed to be a Oklahoma preview show, but he's down for the count. He's a little bit sick. I think he'll be just fine. Scheduled to be back tomorrow, but I didn't want to jump into it. And to be quite honest with you guys, I still want to be as prepared as humanly possible for these fall camp preview series. We put so much time into it. So we're going to do that hopefully tomorrow as soon as Shane is feeling better, back on his feet. I think he got sick at the golf course. But so I'm going to fly solo here. Got my bourbon. And many of you cousins came through with some outstanding questions. So I think this will be a really fun mailbag. This is one of the best mailbags we've ever done. That's good. So just bear with me. Real quick, shout out cousin Tony. Tony, he has been a member for 7 months. We appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much for supporting the show. You've been a member of the family, but
welcome to the family.
Thank you for staying for 7 months, man. That's awesome. We appreciate you, Tony. Let us know if you got a question, Tony. And I don't think I got one of yours, so happy to answer any question you got. So let's get into it. It's going to be hard for me to keep up with the chat and talk without cousin Shane hanging out. But like I said, this is going to be a really fun show. Got some really, really good stuff. So let's just get right into it. And as always, if you're an official member, if you're a cousin and you ask a question on the YouTubes, you're going to get your question answered every single time. I promise. There's even one in here I don't really want to answer, but I'm going to hit on it because he's an official cousin. So we're going to get into it. It's not this one. This was maybe one of the best. Shout out cousin Goler Zachary. I wonder if, I hope I'm saying that right, or if maybe he's got his name switched around. What is the best individual performance in an SEC game that you can remember? And why is it Darren McFadden at South Carolina in 2007 or Tim Tebow at South Carolina in 2007? Darren McFadden lit up the Cox for a then record 321 rushing yards. The next week, the Cox gave up 7 touchdowns to Tim Tebow. Man, what a question. And I'm going to, you know, forget so many guys. I think we're going to miss so many here. Oh, shout out real quick. We just got a $20 donation. We appreciate you. Steven up. Appreciate you, buddy. I'm going to play a little jingle here for you. And really, you know, we've become like a little family here. I didn't want to leave you guys hanging. That's why I'm doing this emergency show. I didn't want to go a day without one.
Roll Tide.
We appreciate you, Steven, up. So thank you so much for supporting the show. We really do appreciate you. Even Shane. Shane sends his love. Brodo says, hey, Shane had some of that cinnamon on the golf course. I think he may have. Either that or that guy is just so despondent that Vince Morrow has left the Kentucky program. And I think the number one reaction that we've seen from that was people said, well, hell, Shane's not going to have to do his 12-hour shift in the coal mine. No way in hell Kentucky's going 4-0. If you missed it, Shane vows to do 12-hour shift in a Kentucky coal mine if the Wildcats start the season 4-0, which would include beating Ole Miss and beating South Carolina in Columbia. So that sure as hell is not going to happen at this point in time. So again, the question, best individual performances that I can recall. And I mean, there's just so many. This is an impossible question to answer, but I do love it. I'm going to do a little screen share, and this is cheating a little bit here. I realize it's cheating, but I mean, he has single performance. Da-da-da-da. I mean, look at what, again, I realize this is cheating, but look at this is Joe Burrow's stats from 2019. And it's really just like pick any damn game. The guy completed nearly 80% of his passes, including this one in particular stood out to me against Florida, 87.5 completion percentage, 293 yards, 3 touchdowns. Look what he did against Arkansas. 23 of 28, 82% completion percentage, 327 yards, 3 touchdowns. And then this postseason run. My God, 349 passing yards against Georgia, 4 touchdowns, no picks. The Oklahoma one, sorry, Oklahoma fans, you weren't SEC. We hated you then. 493 yards, 7 touchdowns. That's probably the standout. And then, I mean, just the national championship, 463 yards, 5 touchdowns. So Joe Burrow, just basically the entire damn season, really stood out to me as an all-time great. Here's Devonta Smith. Again, this is cheating a little bit. If you want to just highlight one game against LSU during the COVID year, had 8 catches, 231 yards, 3 touchdowns. But I really wanted to highlight Devonta Smith's postseason. 15 catches for 184 yards, 2 touchdowns against Florida in the SEC championship. Notre Dame, oh man, he could only do 7 catches for 130 yards and 3 touchdowns. Again, that's a playoff game. And then the championship, 12 catches, 215 yards, 3 touchdowns against the Luckeyes, Ohio State. They'll never win one again, damn it, as long as I live. So, I mean, that was impressive. But again, the question is individual performances. And I've highlighted a couple. And this will catch a lot of people off guard because this guy was not that good. But if you remember, I'm just now realizing a lot of these are COVID, so maybe that's part of it. But week one, Mississippi State, Mike Leach's debut in the SEC, a guy by the name of KJ Costello. He's going to be a trivia question probably for the rest of his life. He broke and, in fact, shattered the SEC record for passing yards in a single game. 623 against the defending national champions. Now, LSU turned out to be not that good this year. They ended up firing Coach O not long after this. But, I mean, going on the road, defending national champions, first time for Mike Leach in the SEC. This ain't going to work, right? He just went up and down the field, 5 touchdowns. KJ Costello, that was one hell of a performance. That really stood out to me. How about even just last season, Jarquez Hunter, Auburn outstanding running back, 23 carries, 278 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns against Kentucky. Lenore Sellers against Clemson, not even statistically like gaudy, but I mean, he put the team on his back and beat Clemson. And then how about this one? Jalen Hyatt against Alabama. 22 season, and keep in mind, Alabama was number one in the country. 6 catches, 207 yards, and 5 touchdowns. I don't know that we'll ever see that again against a number one team, but that was wild. That was pretty damn wild. Emily said, hey, did I miss something? Where is Shane? Shane's sick. He couldn't make it. We were going to do Oklahoma preview, but we're doing mailbag, and I'm drinking whiskey. Because I'm trying to make this fun. Hey, Sven has got a good one here. Dak Prescott against LSU in 2014. That was awesome. That was a good one, too. Looking for other ones in the comments here. No, we did not fire Cousin Shane. Cousin Shane is he's just bedridden right now. He told me he hadn't even gotten out of bed. And he told me that about 3 hours ago. He said, I'm not going to do it. I can't make the pod. So this is where we're at. Hopefully, he's back. Is he? He's in the chat though. Yeah, I did text him right before I hopped on and said, "Get your ass in the chat." There's no excuse to not be in the chat. So hopefully he's in here. Yeah, here he is. Here's Cousin Shane. Hi, I will let him hang out with us on the next show. I don't really get it, but I am on some bourbon here. So those are my outstanding individual performances. How about Cousin Sven? He hit us up with a great question here too. Which quarterback will lead the SEC in passing yards, not including rushing yards here, and who will be the quarterback that throws the most interceptions or fumbles? Oh, Sven, you always know how to get that last dagger in there. But hey, this one's for you, Sven, because I think, now there's a little bit of an asterisk here, right? If he stays healthy, I'm going to give it to Blake Shapen. Mississippi State quarterback for a couple of reasons. The offense is phenomenal. Jeff Lebby is a hell of a quarterback coach. I think they're going to be high flying on offense, but we're also going to be losing a lot, unfortunately, right? So we're going to be playing catch up, and this team's going to live by the offense here, and they were highly productive last year. So if Blake Shapen can stay healthy, I think he is your leader in passing yards in the SEC next season. But if he's not, and he's gotten banged up a lot in his career, give me Garrett Nussmeier. I think Garrett Nussmeier is a close second and may very well lead the SEC in passing yards next season. I think LSU will rely on him early and often, and he may very well go down as the best quarterback in the conference this season. There's not a lot of hype for Nuss. There is NFL hype with him, but you don't see Nussmeier. I'm not saying he's completely disrespected, but I don't know that I've seen anyone outside of Baton Rouge have him as the number one quarterback in the SEC. He's got to be in the conversation. He's highly productive. Year two starting quarterback. He'll be right there. And then who's going to lead the SEC in fumbles and interceptions? I don't want to call anyone out individually, and I particularly like Jackson Arnold, so I'll just say whoever Auburn starts at quarterback, thanks to Hugh Freeze. That's my final answer. Hey, you know who I would never put in that category? Cousin JR. Back again.
Legend. Cousin JR has done it again.
He shows up bored, Cousin Shay. JR, we appreciate you, buddy. He has gifted two memberships. This time, let's see. H received a membership. What a name. H and Big Gators Swag. Welcome to the family, courtesy of the legend, JR.
The memberships in this podcast are brought to you in part by Cousin JR.
What a guy.
To the family.
We appreciate you, JR. Thank you so much for supporting the show. We really do appreciate you. All right. And Shren also had a baseball question. He wants to know if we'll watch the baseball, break it down, live reaction. That ain't going to happen. If you're into college baseball, hell, if you're into Major League Baseball, that's awesome. I don't watch it. I've never watched a college baseball game in my life, and I don't think I've watched a Major League Baseball game since like the early 90s. So, no, that ain't happening. It ain't happening, brother. All right, so here's the question that I didn't want to answer, but he's an official cousin, so I got to answer it, right? Cousin Mason Mullins, any official cousin gets their question automatically answered on the YouTubes. If you had to trade two SEC teams, what teams would it be? Cousin Mike says JR is Elon's burner. It must be for the way he's spent it here. Hookem wants to know, what whiskey are you sipping on there? Because this came courtesy of Cousin Ollie. This is some good, good stuff here. This is Blanton's. This is high quality stuff. I can't afford Blanton's, but Cousin Ollie gifted it to me. So I'm enjoying it. So who would I trade away? Honestly, none of them. But I couldn't say that with a straight face a couple years ago, because I think Vanderbilt, if they didn't invest in football more, they needed to get their ass out of here, because this is the highly competitive conference, and you can't half-ass it and try to compete. They put in money into the stadium. They put in money into the facilities. They're finally putting money into NIL and the coaching staff with the Kill Squad and Tim Beck at offensive coordinator. So they are investing in football now. So even Vanderbilt, I would keep. And you ask SEC coaches, well, they probably want Vanderbilt not to do that, but they don't want Vanderbilt gone. Everybody, you need someone, not a layup, but I mean, quite frankly, that's what Vanderbilt has been more often than not under Clark Lee and Derek Mason. But you know, they don't want it to be 16 teams murders row. I think that's a big reason why, if the SEC expands, they're going to go after North Carolina. They're going to go after Virginia, because the vast majority of programs in this conference can handle those two, North Carolina included. I don't care who in the hell their coach is or his girlfriend. They North Carolina, which may be really good this year because they got a cake schedule, they would probably be Kentucky. And Kentucky now, not Kentucky, you know, winning 9-10 games. I think they would be at the very, very bottom of the league if North Carolina was in here playing football. But you know who's not at the bottom? Cousin Steve. Steve Riegel, welcome to the family, brother. We appreciate you. Just signed up for a membership. What a guy.
Welcome to the family.
We appreciate you, Steve. Thank you, Cousin Steve. Really, really thank you for that. Thanks for supporting this podcast. Without you guys, there is no show. That's why I'm drinking bourbon. So I'm happy to hang out here and answer questions, even when Shane is down for the count. Now, if I'm sick, will Shane jump on here and answer questions? I doubt it. But maybe we could pressure him into doing it. I don't know. All right. Next, this is a really good question. Speaking of Shane, Vol Tiger, did you and Shane ever fight as kids? This is a real question he asked. And I wanted to address this because the answer is no. Because I have seen Shane get into physical altercations with the Flying Hawaiian, his brother. And Shane is a damn tank. Even as a youngster, he was a nice guy. He's always been a nice guy, super nice guy. But you don't mess with Shane because he'll mess you up. He'll mess you up even today, I would think, if he wanted to, which I'm sure none of you, he would. But like, this is a true story. We used to play football in the house, and it would be his brother and I on one team, Shane on the other. And Shane had to play football on his knees because he was just so big and strong. And he'd on his knees, and his brother's really quick too. He'd whoop both our asses every time. And I've seen him and his brother get into a fight. And it was like, his brother's like the ultimate warrior. You know, he's got like nothing, the Flying Hawaiian, that is. He's got ultimate energy. He never gives up, but he got broke by Shane a time or two. So no, you do not mess with Cousin Shane. I would never fight Cousin Shane. He'd whoop my ass. He'd whoop anybody's ass that steps up to him. I'll just tell you that. Cousin Jimmy says Shane just didn't want to do the Oklahoma preview. That's not true at all. He is sick as a dog, last time I checked. Now, here's the other part of Vol Tiger's question. I love this question. Sort of. Yes, half like it, half hate it. And I'll tell you why. He says he counted 13 SEC teams that are ranked in the preseason top 25. How many end up there at the end of the season, and who are they? Now, here's why I hate it. Because, well, first of all, he didn't tell me specifically what rankings he's looking at, but I assume, because I looked it up, it's the ESPN FPI. Don't use ESPN FPI for anything. It's garbage. There's a reason we never reference it. And remember, we were just talking about Joe Burrow a couple minutes ago and his fantastic season. LSU went 15-0. You know where FPI ranked them at the end of the season? And I'm not talking about end of regular season. I'm talking after the bowl games, after the playoff, after the national championship. FPI had LSU 15-0, national champs, number 3. They had them behind Clemson, who they just whooped Clemson's ass, and behind Ohio State, which lost to Clemson in the playoff. So FPI is stupid. But again, I'll answer the question because it's a great question. So these are the teams that are ranked according to FPI, which again is garbage. There are 13 teams. Here are the teams. Texas 1, Georgia 2, Alabama 3. I do love the fact SEC is 1, 2, 3. A&M 8, Tennessee 10, LSU 12, Ole Miss 13, Auburn 14, South Carolina 15, Oklahoma 16, Florida 18, Arkansas 22, and Mizzou 23. So 13 of the top 25, I actually do love that. Maybe I'm starting to warm up to FPI. Not really. But how many, that's the question, how many of those 13, if they are truly top 25 today? It's pretty interesting to see Arkansas in the top 25, isn't it? And it's very interesting to see Tennessee and A&M in the top 10. I wouldn't agree with any of those. But of the 13, how many are staying at the end of the year? Give me 8. 8 teams, I think, are going to be ranked by the end of the season. So who did I eliminate? Auburn. Sorry, get the hell out of here. Till you got a better head coach. Not ranking them. Arkansas, 22. If they are ranked 22 at the end of the season, Sam Pittman may be coach of the year. Mizzou. I'm going to say no. They might be 9-3, but I don't know who they beat. I feel like I'm way too down on Mizzou here. But let's look at, I mean, their over-under is only 7.5. If they go 8, let's say they go 8-4. Let's say they hit the over. But they lose to Bama, A&M. And keep in mind, I've got Bama winning the SEC. So I think they could be elite. A&M, Bama are losses. Let's pick two more. Let's just say Oklahoma. And let's say Auburn or South Carolina. If Mizzou goes 8-4, are they ranked? Why are we ranking them? Because they beat Kansas? Kansas is not any good. Vanderbilt? Oklahoma? Maybe? I think I just gave them a loss to Oklahoma, didn't I? Yeah. Arkansas? Mississippi State? I mean, I think you can hit 8-4 and not be ranked by the end of the year. Now, you go 9-3, you should be ranked. But 8-4 with that schedule, I don't think you're going to be ranked. But there's still a couple that I left out here. I'm saying Oklahoma or Florida, 50-50. Now, I think both these teams are top 15-ish, top 20-ish quality, but the schedule is going to get one of them, if not both of them. I don't think both of these teams. I think one will hit, and I think one will fade. I don't know which one yet. That's just my guess. And then I'm doing the same thing, kind of cheating here a little bit, 50-50. I think Tennessee, I think they could fade. The same thing I just said with Missouri. Let's say Tennessee goes 8-4 with the losses to Georgia, at Bama, at Florida, and Oklahoma. Why are we ranking Tennessee at 8-4? Because they beat Syracuse? Because they beat Arkansas at home, Vanderbilt at home, at Kentucky, at Mississippi State? I don't think so. Now, if they're 9-3, they'll be ranked. But 8-4, I don't think it's a given. And same deal with Ole Miss. Where are the wins if they go 8-4? I'm not ranking any of these teams if they go 8-4. Because unless you know, let's say South Carolina's like 11-1 and they beat them or something, or Florida's 10-2 and they beat them. Maybe that's a different story. Like if we're underrating somebody, but I think only 8 is realistic at the end of the year. 13 maybe today. I think that's too many for me right now. I really do think. Oh, wait. We got another member. Appreciate you. Cameron Williams. Welcome to the family. We appreciate you, brother. This whiskey's starting to hit me.
Welcome to the family.
We appreciate you. Thank you so much for supporting the show. We really do appreciate all the support we get from you guys as I sit here and ramble. All right. Here's another one. Love this question from, and what a name, Letters to God is who asked this question. Which teams will improve yet not beat their win total from last season? Now, if his question was not beat the win total from this year, I probably would have had different answers, but he's saying not beat the win total from last year. Better than last year, but not have as many wins. I think the prime suspect for that, there's two. Arkansas, which won 7 games last year, really only 6 in the regulation, but 7-6 total. Can they be better? And I mean, this schedule's tricky as hell. I think the only conference game you're going to be favored in is Mississippi State. That doesn't mean you're going to lose them all, but I think there's a scenario where you're slightly better, but you go 6-6 or 5-7. I really do. You know, the first two, Alabama, A&M, Arkansas State, let's give them Memphis. Let's give them Mississippi State. And let's give them Auburn. I mean, there's a world where those are your wins and your losses are at Ole Miss, at Tennessee. A&M has owned your ass, at LSU, at Texas, and Missouri. And you could still be a top 20-ish type caliber team, but go 6-6 or 5-7. I really do think. So this is a team that could get better, the record may not necessarily reflect it. And same deal with Vanderbilt. The fact that Virginia Tech is flip-flopped and you're going to Blacksburg this year, where they're going to play Enter the Sandman, where apparently that makes it a tough environment to play. I think their home field record is still pretty shitty. But there's a world where Vanderbilt, that just won 7 games, is slightly better than last year, but only wins 5 or 6 games this year. I don't think that is crazy to think could happen, especially with all these road games. I don't think they're going to be favored in a single road game. Maybe Virginia Tech, but I don't think that's a given. And then some very tough home games. LSU, Mizzou, potentially Auburn. So I think Arkansas and Vanderbilt could be better, but the record may not reflect it. And then he also wants to know, did Cousin Shane get stuck in the sand at the golf course? No, he did not. To my knowledge, Shane did not hit the golf course. Maybe he did, and he just, you know, maybe we should check his profile, because he's probably on a golf course just lying to me. But to my knowledge, he is sick as a dog. I'm getting there. I think I had too big of a pour. Jeez Louise. Thanks for calling me out. Thanks for calling me. All right. How about this one? Arrows for Apples. What a name. What a name you got there, Arrows for Apples. I like this question. Should the SEC go back to divisions? And when I first thought of this, I was thinking, no, hell no. Divisions, they don't rotate the games. You know, there's common things like A&M has never hosted Georgia, I don't believe. I mean, hell, they've been in the same conference since 2012. They've never, you know, swapped home and home games here. That's ridiculous. But if we're going to stay at 8 games, I mean, we're basically doing that now, where we're not rotating. So if they stay at 8 conference games, I think they should bring back divisions. I'm not 100% sure how they do that. I would assume you got to put Texas and Oklahoma in the West. Of course, geography's never mattered to this thing in the first place. So I don't know. I would maybe kick, you would assume Auburn to the East. But again, that makes things squirrely in itself. I just think if they're going to stick at 8, you might as well just have damn divisions. Now, I hope they don't do that, but they're not eager to go to 9 games. If they go to 9 games, hell no. No divisions, can't have it, because I want the constant rotation to where you play every other school at least every other year. And that's possible, and it makes all the sense in the world, but the coaches don't want it because they're afraid they're going to get eliminated from the playoff. I mean, it's stupid, but I don't know why we cater to these coaches. You know, there's for a group of guys that average about $7-8 million annually, there's no one that bitches more about all their money that they're making than these coaches. It's ridiculous. So, no, you're making all that money, play the damn games, go to 9 games, no divisions. But if they stay at 8, we're probably better off with the divisions. All right, how about this question from Jason Bagley? Love this one. He wants to know, if Mizzou beats Oklahoma, which they did last year, is that when Oklahoma fires Brent Venable? Oh, man. I love the fact Mizzou fans can confidently talk shit at Oklahoma, because I've heard nothing but Oklahoma fans talk down to Mizzou, and now here we are, roles reversed. Yeah, I think, quite honestly, I think that could be the spot right there. And I'm not sitting here saying Brent Venable is going to get fired, but I did read a stat today. I'm sure Oklahoma fans know it well, but I bet the rest of the SEC does not know. So Brent Venables, in his 3 seasons, he's had 2 6-7 years. These are the only 2 losing seasons that Oklahoma has had since like 1999 or something. Only 2. And it's been 2 of the 3 years this man has coached a football team. So why Missouri makes all the sense in the world, because you got this stretch of Texas at South Carolina, which whooped you last year. Both those teams, really. Ole Miss, they beat you. But then you're at Tennessee, you're at Alabama. I'm not sitting here saying Oklahoma's going to lose all these games, but if, and this is hell, I've picked Oklahoma, I think, to win at Tennessee. But if that's a loss, and then you come back and you lose to Alabama, and then you come back and lose to Mizzou, three-game losing streak, I think that would be probably, you know, and I'm assuming those are not the only losses. Let's say they're a 4 or 5 win team at that point in time. I think it makes all the sense in the world that that would be the week that they potentially pull the trigger and let go of them. Now, if Oklahoma goes like 10-2 and 11-1 or something, and one of those losses is to Missouri, which to me seems very unrealistic. If Oklahoma's that good, you're not firing him. But if he's on a 3-game skid and they've lost several games, I think so. I think you let him go right there. All right, how about this one from Kenny Davis, a.k.a. Shane's Burner. If Joey Aguilar plays well, what are the chances Tennessee wins 10? He didn't say regular season or postseason, so I assume he's just saying 10-2. Can Tennessee get back to 10-2 with Joey Aguilar? I mean, I think this schedule helps you. I really do. And now, you guys know I'm all in on Florida. I think Florida, borderline playoff team. But you could convince me that Florida crashes and burns and Billy Napier's ass is gone by November 22nd. Now, it's always stupid to pick Tennessee to beat Florida. Shane and I seem to make that mistake annually, and we're mostly proven wrong. But, you know, maybe if that happens, maybe if Florida's in shambles, Kentucky's already seemingly in shambles. That's one of your only 4 road games. Mississippi State, I don't think they have much of a shot of beating you. But again, I don't think they're going to be as big of a joke as last year. And I think all the home games, aside from Georgia, are winnable. And again, the question is if Joey Aguilar plays well. If Joey Aguilar is mid, no, this is completely out of the question. But let's say he's an upgrade over Nico, which I don't think he is. You know, let's clear that up. I don't think that he's going to come in here, and I think Nico in year 2 would have taken a step up, but Nico wasn't that great either, you know? So it's not like a crazy leap to say Joey Aguilar maybe is a slight upgrade. If he's a slight upgrade, what are the odds Tennessee can get to 10-2? Maybe 50-50. I mean, I don't like it. I don't think it's more likely than not, but if some of the other teams crash and burn, I think there's a path for Tennessee. Now, if they had Oklahoma's schedule, if they had Florida's schedule, no shot in hell. But they got one of the weaker schedules in the conference. So I think there's an opportunity for Tennessee there. I really do. All right, how about this question? LA Chronics. I hope he's on the Chronic. Will Kentucky let Bob Stoops go? They don't even know the guy's name. And he does say, I think that's his name. If so, who do they hire? Yeah, I mean, I think the writing is on the wall. I know his buyout's insane. I think they will come to a resolution at some point. I mean, the guy's not even recruiting. They got 2 recruits out there. I think if Kentucky goes under, which means 4-8 or worse, I think his ass is grass. Who does Kentucky hire? That, you know, that's a great question. I don't know. I mean, the favorite's John Summerall, right? But I think even at this point, I think John Summerall is he's probably got better opportunities out there. So if not him, I don't know. I think Kentucky would probably go the G5 route, maybe like a hot G5 coach. And one guy I think would be, I know he's had some kind of issues or whatever. He's apparently unhireable in the SEC. I don't really know why. But the guy that's down at Liberty, Chadwell, I think that's the guy that you got to bring excitement back. You know, what do they say? Basketball on grass or whatever. That's what you want at Kentucky. You want fun and gun. Jamie Chadwell, offensive minded coach. That's what I want to see from the next Kentucky football coach, which will probably be in a couple months here. So give me an offensive minded guy and a guy like Jamie Chadwell. If he can continue, I think at Liberty, he was really good last year. He killed it at Coastal Carolina. If he keeps it up, yes, his buyout is $44 million. but he's got to go. I mean, more, that's more larger buyouts, I should say, have been paid. So I don't know. We got a ton of money in the SEC. Cousin Shane says, I think they should give him time to rebuild. Yeah, I mean, if he can't do it by year 15, we got to move on from this guy. You know what? I mean, he's had an eternity here. I mean, I realize it's Kentucky, but it always makes me laugh when you look at his SEC record. Oof, 36 and 62. I mean, that's just... That's a C coach right there. I don't know what to tell you guys. All right, how about this one, Shay? Guys, I really like this question. Bird Brain, which this may actually be Cousin Shane's burner. Is this the year all 16 SEC coaches get fired in the SEC and it just means more? I really just wanted to read this one because I'm starting to buy in a little bit to what Shane, remember his bold take. We've done one bold take and we were supposed to do two. We did one. We forgot. But Shane's bold take was no coaches get fired. So this is the complete opposite. All the coaches get fired. Clearly that's not going to happen, but you know, with all these schools complaining and whining about all this money and they got to pay the players, this, that, and the other, and NIL and the transfer portal, I think we could realistically get to a place where, like, no one gets fired. Because I think these schools are scared to death to have to eat a massive buyout because they're already kind of figuring out, you know, we don't have the money to pay the player. At least that's what they say. They got the money, but to pay these coaches and pay the players, that means the administrators and the coaches need to be getting paid less, not more. So it's very hard to justify Billy Napier's buyout. It's hard to justify Brent Venables' buyout. Hell, it's even hard to justify Mark Stoops' buyout. So until they kind of figure out their financials a little bit better, and I think programs are also a little bit more willing to give their coach time, because last time I think it was this time last week we were talking about Billy Napier and if 9-3 is good enough, because at Florida that they used to run your ass off. If Billy Napier goes 9-3 now, we're building him a damn statue. And yes, that should be laughed at, but at the same time, it's just we are in such a time of transition and with the portal and NIL, and I think some programs obviously have handled it a lot better than others. It's very hard to fire a guy unless he's a total loser like Chad Morris or something like that, or Jimbo Fisher. It's very hard to fire a guy like that and know you're getting an upgrade. First of all, that's always been hard, but it's even harder now because literally every single one of your players can jump in the portal the moment you fire your coach and they're all fielding offers. So yeah, you could be looking at a Jeff Lebby situation where we're going into year two with Jeff Lebby, right? But it really feels like year one because they're bringing in 60 new players because of the transition was so rough there. So I don't know. It may be harder than ever to fire a coach because there may just not be the money there to do it. So there we may get to a point where all the coaches come back. I really do think. All right, how about this one from Roderick Davis? Should the SEC break away from the NCAA and the NFL G League and make the minor leagues the G League? interesting theory, but Greg Sankey was very, very transparent about this at the spring meetings. He said, we want the NCAA to exist. And I know that there was that quote everybody ran with, and they I think On Three and Company, they put it on a damn graphic, and it just goes viral, right? That's the game they play. And the quote was, Sankey said, I got people asking me, why are we in the NCAA? Well, they cut it, and then they didn't listen to the rest of what he had to say, and it was about championships. And this is still football and all these sports, baseball, basketball, and all the women's sports. They want it to be national. They don't want it to just be the Southeast champion, the Big Ten champion. This still needs to be nationwide sports. Otherwise, it's just not you're not really a national champion if you're just the SEC champion, you know? And the SEC doesn't want to govern the whole country. They just want to govern their 16 institutions. So they very much still want the NCAA to be in place, and they wanted them to run the championships and hopefully get teams from all across the country to compete. Because it really, I get the sentiment. I mean, hell, I don't pay attention to any of the football outside of the SEC. That doesn't mean the rest of them suck. I just don't care. And obviously, I'm dedicated to the SEC, and I'm hyper-focused, and that's all I think about. But, you know, there are a couple good schools. But I get it. You know, the West Coast, all that sucks. And the Big 12, they'll probably never win another national championship unless they're Texas Tech guy, you know, has a $100 million roster. I get it. That's all fair to say. But at the end of the day, we still need, you know, Texas playing Arizona State in the playoff. We still need Georgia playing Baylor, as if Baylor could ever get there in a playoff. You know, it just can't. We don't want to get to a place where it's just SEC and Big Ten. I promise you, that's not going to be good for the sport. It's really going to hurt it, I think. And I think they are doing everything they can to ensure that hasn't happened. And for all the shit Greg Sankey catches, it was his idea to go to the 12-team playoff, and it was to include the Pac-12, which is now deceased. But the SEC dominated the 14 playoff. They would have forever dominated, I think, the 14 playoff. But he expanded it, yes, to get more SEC teams in, but to make it more access, as he calls it, to the rest of the country. And I think he was successful well before the Pac-12 died. But it serves a much greater purpose. Like last year, I know it was just 1 year. We only have 1 year of data to go off of. But last year was pretty awesome, with so many games outside of the SEC kind of mattering for the playoff, and so many games really even in the SEC that mattered, like a Florida Ole Miss. That's the one I always come back to. Hell, even Tennessee Vanderbilt. Tennessee had two losses, yet they were playing for their playoff lives in Nashville against Vanderbilt. In years past, that wouldn't have happened. It just made the regular season that much more exciting, and I think it makes all of college football exciting. All right, Frey Daddy Hog, do you guys still give away koozies for reviews? Yeah, we do it for reviews, but we have kind of skewed more towards YouTube official cousins. So if you're a cousin, all of these people that have been blessed by JR, reach out to us at thatsecpodcast@gmail.com. And if you're an official cousin to the channel, we're happy to mail you a koozie. I don't know that we have all the teams remaining. I think we may be out of South Carolina, but if we get a bunch of South Carolina people requesting them, I'll order some more. So yeah, I have a closet full of SEC podcast koozies of at least 15 teams right now. So if you want your koozie, reach out to us, thatsecpodcast@gmail.com. Happy to do that for any official cousin, free of charge. Just let us know which team you represent, and we'll send it your way. And then last question here. I'm really, really starting to feel this bourbon. I got to cut it before we get crazy here. Cousin Trey, as always, appreciate you, buddy. If the teams played their games in reverse order, would they hit the over? Now, this was a very, very interesting question. And I didn't really want to go through all of them, because I think the vast majority may not hit their over, because the way the schedules are lined up, you're playing your cupcake type teams. But I think if the SEC just went full reverse order, that means, you know, your first six or seven games, most of them would be SEC. I mean, it'd be a damn bloodbath. On one hand, I'd like to see it, and on one hand, I wouldn't. It would be like the COVID season, where about 3 weeks in, several teams basically gave up and quit because they were too beaten up and battered and all that. But one team I think might actually do better. I mean, maybe not, but this opener, I mean, it's wild here. Texas. I mean, you could, I know they would have Georgia week three if they did it reverse, but I'd much rather play Texas A&M at home than at Ohio State. So this may be one team that it would help to play in reverse order, but I couldn't really think of another one that it would help. I mean, everybody else would be playing a damn gauntlet right out the gate. And I think the vast majority, maybe, well, again, Auburn, you don't want to open with Alabama, but Mercer, Vanderbilt, and Kentucky, that wouldn't be a bad start right there. I still think I'd rather play Baylor, Ball State, and South Bama than open with Alabama. But no, I think the vast majority would go under if we played in reverse order. I mean, that would be insane. And then Trey's always, he doesn't have a lot of food questions because Shane's not here. So he saves his food questions for Shane. But he does want to know what's the beer of choice on a hot day. And for me, there are two options that I would consider. Hot day, you know, I do like a lot of like IPAs, and I actually like Guinness. I've never been a Guinness guy till recently. I kind of enjoy it, but I can't eat it. I can't drink any of that if it's too hot. I mean, that would be a disastrous selection. So for me, on a hot day, give me a Corona or give me a Coors or get the hell out of here. Those would be my two options for beer of choice on a hot day. And then he wanted to know, what's your favorite mixed drink night out with the lady? I always order old fashions. So I'm an old fashioned drinker. Sometimes I'll just drink it neat, obviously, or a margarita. And that's usually her decision. And maybe like, you know, if we go to a Mexican restaurant or something, you can't really order an old fashioned, but margarita I've always been fond of, but I'm more really like, I like an old fashioned more than anything. Yes, Shane is in the comment bossing people around about hitting the like button. We appreciate, see, look at Shane. Shane's showing up, even though he's not really showing up. But he is working overtime, even though he's sick as a dog right now. Cousin Todd says, Shane's still missing since last night. Mike, have you called the jailhouse? I could be mistaken, but I think sometimes they let the inmates have a cell phone. So it is possible that Shane is arrested and is commenting from jail. I can't disprove that. All right, any other questions? I missed about 1,000 comments, and I'm sorry. It's hard to conversate and not look at the screen the whole time. But Shane should be back as long as he's not sick. Hopefully, fingers crossed, he's better. Yeah, I'm not seeing any questions. So, yeah, I think that's going to do it for this episode. I appreciate each and every one of you. And sorry for going solo here. It was a little last minute. But we do appreciate each and every one of you, especially those that donated and became members of the channel. We appreciate you. We'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.